Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
You might have heard this morning in the news that the United States has restricted travel for its diplomats in Israel amid fears of an attack by Iran. The US embassy said staff had been told not to travel outside the greater Jerusalem, Tel Aviv or Beersheba areas out of an abundance of caution. That comes amid fears that Tehran could launch reprisals after Israel struck the Iranian consulate in Syria 11 days ago. The US President Joe Biden warned that Iran is threatening to launch a significant attack. Now, Donald Trump has said that Israel should finish up the war in Gaza and we can't have this going on. So for more on all of this, we're joined now by Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning, Claire.
So that warning from Joe Biden, this restriction of travel for US diplomats in Israel, how significant is all of this?
Well, I think that the US believes at the moment that Iran will strike a target within the next 48 hours. Iran has already indicated through its sources that no embassy is safe, that no Israeli embassy is safe anywhere in the world. Also the US, of course, because of its support for Iran, is very tied into this and has promised that its support for Iran will be ironclad in the case of any attack. Now, behind this, Claire, there is real frustration in the US, in the Pentagon, in the White House and the Department of State, that basically Israel went ahead with this attack in Damascus, which killed the very senior Iranian commandant, I believe 13 people in total, but it didn't notify the US. This came out of the blue, but of course the US is honour-bound and feels hide-bound to support Israel in the case of a reciprocal attack. So the US, I think, feels that it's been dragged into this. It sent its senior general to the region, to Israel, I think there's a real frustration in the US that it feels it's in a no-win situation. There are so many moving parts to this. On the one hand, you had what was characterized by the Department of State and by the National Security Council spokesperson, John Kirby, during calls he had with us, as a very stern conversation between Biden and Netanyahu. This was, of course, following the strike on the World Central Kitchen workers, which killed 7 of them. Now, nothing has changed since then. Joe Biden said he wanted to see changes, I believe, within hours or immediately. They were the words. But when we got the readout of that conversation, it was actually pretty mild and there was no deadline set and there were no specifics. So Israel came out and said, we're going to open the Erez crossing and we're going to use the port that's 25 miles north of it. And had this happened or had steps been taken immediately, this would certainly make a huge difference in northern Gaza. Mm-hmm. Now, none of that has happened so far. I've heard from aid workers who are working in the area and UN people, not a single thing has changed. There hasn't been a single move to open this crossing. There are no security personnel working on it or around it. And it looks like, once again, Israel is just slow walking this promise.
I just wanted to ask you about, you mentioned there the frustrations in the United States that Israel carried out this attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria. And I suppose following on from that, we have to ask, why Israel took that decision. Are there concerns in the United States that there is an attempt, and I heard some analysis on this today, that there is an attempt to draw America back into the region here because it is so destabilized by what's been happening in Gaza?
Oh, I think America is really concerned about that is one of its biggest concerns and the last thing it wants and the last thing Joe Biden wants in the election year, because it's been seen now that really his policy from the get-go has really been ineffective. And I think that exactly as he said, the reason Benjamin Netanyahu is serving different constituencies, there's no love for him in the White House. We all know that. But he has an extreme hard right faction. His coalition is very far right. And they are saying to him, they are insisting Iran is supporting all these groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, all the groups that are attacking Israel. And they want more direct attacks on Iran in retaliation. So the attack on Damascus was serving that demand within his his constituency. Now, he's under severe pressure for other reasons as well within the constituency. And a lot of that is to do with the fact that now Orthodox Israeli scholars may be forced to join the army before they were exempt and they received stipends to for their studies. But now it looks like that's ending. And his members of his far-right coalition are threatening to walk out if that goes ahead. So, but the feeling in America and people I've spoken to is, well, let Netanyahu fall. You know, let his coalition implode, and that might be the best thing. But there are concerns, as you say, about the destabilization, about the consequences for America, about the consequences in the election year for Joe Biden, for a policy that now seems to be, I think, ineffective at best.
Now, let's talk about Donald Trump in all of this, because we saw that report in the New York Times where the two Israeli journalists travelled to meet him in Florida to have a conversation. And we've got to presume that the expectation was that they would see him fully back Israel's operation in Gaza and would happily report that to their audience back home. But that's not quite what happened.
No, and basically Donald Trump, in a very, a little bit of backstory to this, Claire, is Donald Trump, who we know can hold a grudge for 20 years or longer, has not forgiven Benjamin Netanyahu for phoning Joe Biden to congratulate him after the election was called in America by all the major networks. He waited until then. He was quite slow by most standards. He was quite slow out of the blocks. But according to Donald Trump, it was an outrage. It was a betrayal. He should never have done it. And he also then claimed that Netanyahu didn't support him in the strike on the Iranian general back when Trump was president and on Soleimani, and he said that then he took all the credit afterwards. Very typical Trump churlish stuff. But he and Netanyahu's relationship, which was very, very tight, did come under strain. Now, I believe that, and I think Netanyahu certainly believes that, notwithstanding, if Trump were to win in November, and if Netanyahu sees that keeping this war going is the only way for him to stay in power. And as long as he stays in power, a bit like Trump almost, he's able to stay ahead of the criminal charges, the corruption charges that he's facing. So he's very invested in keeping this war going. And I think he believes that if he can do so, and certainly this is what we're hearing in Washington, until November, that he will, if Donald Trump wins, he will have a friend there. Donald Trump will say to him, basically, you know, do whatever you want. And that we already heard Jared Kushner talking about how the beachfront property, as he described it in Gaza, would be very valuable if they could basically get rid of the Palestinians. And this is the sort of transactional nature that a Trump administration would be characterized by. So Trump is saying, yeah, get it over, get it finished. But I think if that doesn't happen, I believe that if you look at Trump's first term, he basically gave Netanyahu whatever he wanted, whatever he asked, he delivered. And I think that he would be found to be a much more reciprocal ally in that his indifference to the Palestinians is already on the record.
And what was the response from the Republicans to what Trump said to the interviewers from Israel? You know, these lines about, oh, you're losing public support for the Gaza assault and that the images that we have seen going around the world are bad for Israel's global image. Were the Republicans alarmed at that?
No, everyone wants this to go away, Claire, whether they're Republican or Democrat. The Republicans don't want to have to deal with this. The Republicans in Congress are much more, you know, America, and I don't think we really understand it in Ireland. America is so overall so passionately pro-Israel and absolutely pro-Israel's absolute right to defend itself in almost any circumstance. But the images coming out of Gaza, the suffering, the disproportionality of the bombardment, and now we have Samantha Power, who's the head of USAID, saying, look, famine has arrived. It's here already. So I think that has caused especially a lot of younger Democrats to say, you know, we can't support this, and America shouldn't support this, and Biden shouldn't support this. But with Republicans, the support for Israel outweighs concerns about what's happening in Gaza. I think that's a fair general thing to say. So I think that the Republicans believe that they can say, look, we're sticking with you. Biden's wavering, but we're the true friends of Israel on this. They mightn't have loved what Trump said, but, you know, they're so used to Trump saying things where they sort of, you know, row back a little bit, or they get forgotten, or he says something else that's even more outrageous and displaces that. So I think almost already there is a sense that Trump is right, that they need that Israel needs to wrap up this war. And I think America feels that generally. Mm-hmm. But the difference, as I say, is America and Republicans in particular are absolutely steadfastly with Israel's right to do that as Israel sees fit.
Marion, good to talk to you as always. Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business